each new copycat, just like the last one. Must be where the money's at, but that's not fun. No fakes. Fingerprints and snowflakes used to be variety, violently inspiring. Ever since you've ducked events, it's fucking tiring. Marching to an 8-bit beat, not what the choir sings. Action scrolled left, right, top to bottom. And every other goon dropped goodies when I shot him. Missions with meaning. Rescuing girlfriends, presidents, daughters. From biker gangs and metalheads, bunny rabbits, kangaroos, raccoons with attitude, whatever your habits. An animal to suit the mood, what about a bobo? Green skin, mean as sin, I heard he fought dirty. Never got a clean win, Halloween grin. Face like an asshole, today's boss battles are all tasteless hassle. Weak spot, another word for coin slot. That sounds silly, thing is the point's not. How hard they had to go and push the Halo pre-orders. Put Heroic on live, but charge continues by the quarter. Who knows? That's how the beard grows. Masochists, fetishes, fuck-ups, weirdos. In fact, I'm sure I've said it before, I've always feared those. And God, I'm worried good, it's got nothing to last in. Just a flash of your form and fashion, a button mashing. Stars in the sky, heaven-sent inventions. Good old games never went without my attention. Maybe one might have been a little bit hit or miss. Clever original, not once ridiculous. Stars in the sky, heaven-sent inventions. Good old games never went without my attention. Maybe one might have been a little bit hit or miss. Clever original. Not once ridiculous.
Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. This is the podcast for October 16th, 2007.
I don't even know what that is.
Jeff, I was waiting for you to go like, papers, please.
I don't know. With every word, it was changing into a different accent. It's October. Did I say it already? October 16th, 2007.
You did not.
I didn't. Well, it is. So there.
Cool.
Okay. It's October 16th. It's my wife's birthday. Happy birthday.
Does she actually listen?
Happy birthday. And she would, belated
and you
happy
had a
birthday to you.
And belated to me, yeah. No, she would never listen to this podcast. Hopefully she doesn't even know it exists.
That's a good thing.
This podcast is my mistress. All right. Let's.
Wow,
that is sad. Say who y'all are, folks.
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott.
Sean Malloy.
Robert Ashley.
Sixth chair, Robert Ashley. He's here again.
Hello.
Can I start off speaking? I mentioned my wife, and she had to endure the night. Not the nightmare. It was actually a positive dream I had last night. Can I start off sharing this dream with you all? Because I think I might now officially win as king of the nerds after this
sure,
dream.
Why not?
This is eerie for Robert. No, because before we came up here, we were talking about things we might talk about.
Yeah.
And one of them was about...
What's your dream?
My dream.
Dream.
That's pretty freaky.
We dreamt that you were going to say what you're about to say.
No, what were you going to say?
Let's hear it.
Let's hear your dream first.
All right. My dream was that I was in Middle Earth.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm not making this up. It's a sad. And I actually I made it into Mordor, and I confronted Sauron himself. And he was like a king. He was like a human. He wasn't like that giant eye. He was like a guy with a crown on. And I I went right up to him and I said, "You're not the Lord of the Rings." And I yelled that in my sleep.
Oh, shit.
So my wife.
Wow. My wife actually heard that.
God. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So my poor beleaguered wife of 20 years, this is what she has to deal
Jeffrey,
with.
Jeffrey,
there went the last 2% of your sex life.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, she just shook me. It's like, Jeff,
I think
you're dreaming.
You are not the Lord of the Rings.
For a second, I thought she was Sauron.
Did you wake up?
Back, devil! What?
Did you wake up in any kind of a cold sweat? Like, were you nervous?
I definitely woke up. You know, it was so vivid and it was so real. I mean, I was confronting Sauron. It was hot shit. Yeah.
Were you able to go back to sleep after that?
No, I was pretty, like, you know, heart was bumping. I was like, oh, shit.
You know,
I was fighting Sauron.
Time to log into Lotro.
You know when your dream's, like, so messed up you don't want to go back to sleep because you're like,
I don't want to go back there.
Yeah, right? Like, how long does it take me, like, if I have, like, I don't know, a glass of water, maybe think about this or that, then I can go back to sleep and it's not going to continue.
But doesn't it suck if it's a good one and you wake up?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jessica Alba is standing right there. She's about to untie her top and then, oh, shit, I'm awake. No, wait for me, Jessica, wait.
Then you try to, like, force
yourself. If I fall asleep right now, maybe she'll still be doing it. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
I've never had that
like,
dream.
You squint your eyes extra tight. Just go, come on.
I'm just kidding.
I shouldn't be talking about that on my wife's birthday. I'm sorry. It's a dream about you taking off your top, honey.
She looks a lot like... She looks Jessica Alba, right? Yeah.
Or Sauron.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Oh,
man.
You could have said Gollum. That would have been.
All right, let's move on.
So,
anyway,
no,
I just wanted to share that dream.
No hobbit feet.
Because before we came up here to record, Robert and I were talking about how we were gaming like 12-year-olds over the weekend insofar as we're, you know, just nonstop playing these games.
Yeah.
To the point that... Yeah, like on Saturday night, it took hours and hours for me to go to bed because I was so keyed up. And then I dreamt that I was playing like some new like Half-Life level or expansion or some shit. And I woke up in a similar state of, except, you know, no one was there to call me on it. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, I find now that I have to take a break between gaming and sleep. If I go straight there, it'll either be bad dreams or else I just can't sleep.
Yeah, I got way too keyed up playing. On Saturday, I was just playing like Orange Box all day long and like everyday shooter. And then I went to bed really late, and I kept on thinking I was still playing Team Fortress and that I needed to like lay some more sticky grenades or something. Just having all these like intense, like, whoa, I forgot to play Team Fortress. And then I'd wake up and be like, oh, sleep.
Yeah.
Portal
was doing that too.
Seeing portals in your dreams, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's like even before you dream too, when you go to lay down and you're, because you know, you need, like, well, at least I do, you need this kind of like decompression time, and I'll usually read or something with the light down and one eye open and then gradually, like I can't just lay in a bed and fall asleep. And the last thing I want to do is be playing video game scenarios through in my head, but I'll get stuck in that, you know, playing what would have been a counter. I just lost at Company Heroes. What would have been a good counter tactic for that? How can I find an exploit for one of the classes in Team Fortress or something? And
have you ever gotten up again
to go play?
Yeah,
no.
Like been in bed, and thinking about it, and then just, oh fuck, I'm gonna go try again.
No, thank God, no.
I did that once.
Yeah, I've done
what game?
It was a long time ago. Actually, this was I think it was the original Company Heroes. I can't tell you.
You'll have to tell us.
No, I'm trying. I'm just... All right. No, it was one of those things where, like, I was trying to figure out why I kept losing at this one map. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I just kind of dawned on me, and I woke up in the middle of the night going, that's it. So
and
I'm like,
got
I
got up.
And I got up and just played it and finished the level.
It's weird. I think I have the exact opposite reaction. Like, if I'm playing something that's particularly intense, like, I get tired. Like,
really?
Yeah, it's really strange. Wow. Like, I'll be done, and I'm like, I need to go, like, lay down for a bit. Especially, I don't know...
Yeah, but when you lay down, then your head isn't still just like spinning with the game? No?
No, not really.
Hmm. Wow, I wish I had that.
Yeah, me too.
Like, man, that game was exhausting. I think I'll go to bed.
that's kind of sad, but
no,
like,
that's
what
nice.
Happens.
That is nice. Well, I definitely get to, I mean, I always know when I'm too, when I got to stop because I'm too tired. You know, I'll do the same jump in episode 2 or whatever and that I just can't make, and it's starting to piss me off, and it's like, ah, okay, it's bedtime. I'm getting cranky.
I mean, did you ever get to that point where like you're playing a game and then like you keep like you actually start like nodding off at the keyboard or something?
I've definitely done that. Yep.
I've never done that.
I've totally done that.
It's a little bit of an old man thing, maybe.
I mean, it especially happens. I notice it especially if I'm raiding in World of Warcraft. Like in that in particular, for some reason, like there's just, I don't know, it must be mental exhaustion. There's just so much going on.
Yeah.
I'm so keyed up while I'm doing it. And, like, so worried about, like, fucking up and having, you know, 24 other people go, oh, man, you didn't click the cube, you son of a bitch, that, like, when it's all over, I'm like, oh.
Did I tell the story of my friend Tony, the meth addict, and how that's all the intro you need? Did I tell you the story of my friend Tony? You can answer yes or no. If the answer is yes, I won't retell it.
Doesn't sound familiar yet.
So far, it doesn't sound familiar.
So the reason I'm friends with the meth addict is, like, in high school, you know, your friends, as you transition out of high school and into college, and some don't go to college, people start doing things, and you're still friends with them, and those friendships just kind of gradually fizzle out,
sure,
but not immediately. So,
one of those fake, like, my friend, the meth addict.
I'm not going to say his last name, but yeah, this is, I mentioned this guy before because his dad owns some of the biggest, the porn shops in San Diego, yeah, and so he ended up becoming
his
a hardcore.
His name was Don Melliot.
A hardcore meth addict, but he would call us over in the middle of the night just begging, you know, you get a call like two in the morning or something, you know, it'd be like summer when, you know, this is when I was an undergrad or something. Come on, man, you got to come over. Well, actually, it wasn't when I was an undergrad. It was fucking past that. And he'd beg us to come over, me and this other guy, Corey, to play Halo. And you know, once in a while you just like, okay, we'll indulge you. We'll come over and play some fucking Halo with you. And he's just freaking out the whole time. He's, you know, he keeps thinking he hears something, like someone's looking through the window or something, which freak us all out. It's kind of like, you know, when you live with the cat, no one else is in the house, and the house settles and the cat just goes running, or it's like staring at everything and it's like contagious. It's contagiously like freaky. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck is that? So like he's doing that the whole creatures. Time. But then as you're playing, you look over at this dude. All of a sudden you're playing deathmatch split screen and you look at a screen and you're like, you see his side just standing there because of course you're looking at everyone else's screen. And you look over at him and he's like asleep with like a burning cigarette in his hand. And then, like, so you go, okay, man, hey, you know, you wake him up a bit. Hey, we're going to go. Like, it was fun. And then he just freaked, no. He just, like, poof, pops up in the instant alertness and just starts playing again, starts shooting you, you know. Like, wow. And then it would go on like that forever. And then if you just said it, as soon as you wanted to say, hey, but we got to get out of here, he would just poof, go back, wow. You know, pop back into life or load up another, load up the glass pipe. I haven't heard from this guy in so long. It's just inevitable. I mean, that was definitely when he was approaching serious psychosis.
If you're still alive, send us a note here so we know.
I'm pretty sure that there aren't a lot of like total tweakers that listen to the GFW podcast.
Oh yeah.
Wrong.
If you're a tweaker, write it. Prove Robert Ashley wrong.
Please.
Tweakers unite.
Embrace it.
That's our demographic. So, Sean, you've never fallen asleep in front of your
playing
monitor?
A game? Never. Not once. Not
of course,
even
you
close.
Play like the action games. I think it's more like it's more
any RPGs
with a turn-based game.
Yeah, it's the shit
and
that
it's
you're
the
playing.
Computer's turn. You know, that's when I'm like, ugh.
Well, yeah, that's terrible.
Or any kind of game where there's like a lull in the action, where you just have to like wander from point A to point
but
B.
But it's also this ability I have in the same way that, you know, when I was a kid, and if I knew I had to go to the bathroom, I would just go to the bathroom. So it's like if I know I'm getting tired, I just stop playing the game. Right. I'm not the kid who would just be like, accident. Which is basically what you are admitting to being. but for gaming.
Well, if you're super hooked on the game, and especially with the turn-based game, this always happened to me with Heroes of Might and Magic because I was so addicted to that game, and I wanted to know what the computer was going to do next because I wanted to get him back on my next turn.
Right.
So I'd be sitting there and I'd just be fighting it. I'd be like, I know I should go to bed. It's 2 a.m.
Right, so just one more turn.
I'm feeling it, but if his move goes fast, I can get one more in. And I would just fight that until all of a sudden I'm realizing, you know, I'm waking up and it's like a half an hour has gone by. His turn might have been over 25 minutes ago and I've just been...
You know? We don't even have to play Truth or Dare. Like, we're so, like, forthcoming with our own Wajah Tales.
This is a video game podcast. Mm-hmm. There's no pretense of cool here.
I've never passed out playing games when I wasn't shit-faced drunk.
When you haven't been?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely not because I was just tired.
Right. You play games drunk?
With friends and stuff, okay. By myself. Okay. I'm not exclusively a PC gamer, so I've got friends who come over.
Wow. Tell us what that's like.
Play. Yeah, it's cool. You sit on a couch and you have other, you know, a couple controllers, beers. It's fun.
It's interesting that you're weird. That you're like saying this because I've heard about this. Like this one guy was telling me he'd play Halo split screen with a meth addict.
Hey, let's talk. That reminds me. Let's take this opportunity to talk about this one photo in our new issue. Can we do that?
Oh, God.
Here we go.
If you'll turn to your listeners at home, if you have your November 2007.
Is it in subscribers
yet? GFW. Oh, they probably don't have it
yet.
No one has it yet. Oh, no one has it yet. Never mind. When you do get it.
Jeez.
Go back to this podcast.
There's a photo on page. I need to get in trouble for this. There's a photo on page 97 of our magazine that's... a shot of these guys playing, what the fuck is it?
Shadowrun?
Shadowrun, thank you. That's not a good start to the story. Anyway, it's one of those manufactured shots that publishers will make. This always shows, like, happy, wholesome-looking gamers playing a game, and they're, like, just... One guy's, like, pumping both fists in his air because he's just made some, like, amazing, you know, headshot or something. Except if you look at the photo, they all have the same goddamn thing on their screen. And it's not even the game.
It's like the attract screen for
Shadowrun. It's like the box art.
And yet this one guy in the very front is like, yeah!
I love the screen. I love this screenshot. Yeah.
The guy behind him, though, has this look like he's like really intense in the
that.
Moment. Like, whoa, let's
see.
What's
let's
happening?
Let's pass this around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right, you got the other guy's leaning closely in with both hands. He's doing some elaborate keystroke there.
Oh, it's totally the box
Except
artist.
Except they all have the same. Yeah, they have the box art. Wow. So that's what your multiplayer. That's what we get on the PC, Robert. Maybe
wow.
you get
hey, that's
the whole
a
crowd platform game. Couch
you,
and
just,
beers
you just got someone fired, I think.
Yeah, probably myself.
Yeah, the guy in the background's hands are all like contorted, like he's playing the most like hardcore speed piano number ever written, and his face is just like.
It's see, like, see, I gotta say, this it just does. It, I'm bringing this up.
It's like Flight of the
this
Bumblebee.
This is very passive aggressive of me. Yeah. So I'll just be aggressive aggressive and say that this bugs the shit out of me because because like this is the insert to our magazine, Games for Windows, the official magazine. So Microsoft gets 4 pages to talk about whatever the hell they want in their little advertising supplement here. We don't write it. We don't edit it. We don't have anything to do with it. They put it in, and so they did this article that's about like why Games for Windows Live is so cool, and one of the things is that, you know, you can play games with your buddies live together, and they take a photo to prove it. So take a real fucking photo. What are they stage wrong with this bullshit on the screens for? And what gamer is going to be fooled by that shot? I mean, that shot's like for our moms. Anyone who actually reads this magazine is going to look at that and goes, what's this bullshit? You know? So what did they think they were doing with that?
I can tell you that the problem with taking a real shot is that these people are pretty.
That's what I know. It's true. They're not gamers. You
a
can
real
tell.
Shot.
It's all. Isn't
they have
it
clear
also?
Skin.
Are there pretty gamers? Period.
Well, yeah.
It looks like it's also like Girl Scout cookied out, where it's like there's an Asian guy, a white dude,
yeah.
a black dude.
Yeah, you got the rainbow. The rainbow coalition.
Yeah. Yeah. There's Barack Obama in the back.
Yeah.
That's United just, Colors of Shadowrun.
Oh, oh God.
Nice.
Anyway, this will be our last podcast. Games for Windows.
Yeah!
We'll come back next week as something else. We love the platform, though.
Let's just
let's
kick
change
in.
The subject.
Robert hey, Ashley here's has quick... been teasing us with eating a cookie.
Robert, you
just
can...
do it. Just do it, Robert.
Do it off the mic.
Yeah, Robert Ashley brought in these amazing ginger thins. Anna's
That's
a... ginger thins. What are these, like
so
Swedish
crunchy.
Or something?
They're sponsored. They
oh, yeah, Swedish. There's a Swedish flag right there on
hey,
the box.
Hey, well, you idiots,
the
like,
IKEA special?
Eat your crackers.
Yeah.
I'm going to drop a hero of the web then.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. And we come back and maybe Bobito got a story to tell.
Okay.
Okay. So I got this in my PM box, and I'll just, this is a different kind of hero of the web. This wouldn't, I don't know.
Is he still a hero, though?
Tony, pass me that pipe. Okay. Anthony Huyen, Mondo is his screen name, says, I know I'll probably be attacked for this.
You're right.
Video games are for losers, etc. But this is exactly how I felt when I had to kill the companion cube. I honestly didn't know what to do. I was pretty much in a daze. I would open portals over lava. I'd forget that the last one I opened put me in front of a turret, completely ignored the energy balls. I would just stand around the enrichment center in a daze. I didn't see any point to advancing the story. How could there be cake without it? Well, it would take some time, but I got over it and took my revenge on GLaDOS. And the point is, I'm sure you will too. If there's anything I take from this, it's that life goes on, even after losing a loved one. It's just up to you how long it takes. Gundolences.
So wow. The thing there is that if you remember, and if you've been listening for far too long, this is a parody of so this is fake, you know, it is a parody of a real hero of the web. And that was the guy who was basically in the exact same state, but over the death of Aeris in Final Fantasy VII. And it was like a word for word, you know, tweaking of that, and how he let his chocobos go to hell or whatever, and he wander the stupid plains and was utterly apathetic, and it took him weeks to bring himself to go and kill Sephiroth or whatever. So yeah, I thought that was funny. I had to break fashion and give someone who had concocted one.
He had taken the
a
time
shout out.
To,
yeah.
Were there any responses to
and
it?
The fact that he remembered, clearly he was writing off the script, so somehow he found the old one and then just
wow.
And hooked it up. Yeah.
Kudos. So can we transition into a portal for that? Since he brought that up.
We can, or we can just... Hey, let's talk about Portal.
Might as well. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Who am I to say? Let's talk about that shit.
We don't have to... We still won't spoil, because I think a couple of us haven't finished. You finish?
I finished.
Okay, I guess it's just you two.
Sorry.
Darren,
I'm close. I'm on level 18.
Ryan. Okay. So we won't spoil. However, I will say
we should.
No, we shouldn't. One of the great endings ever.
You made it. Should I?
Oh, for sure.
Should I like walk out for a second or
nah,
something?
Nah, it's okay.
They'll just go.
it's phenomenal just how well that game builds up.
It sucks though because it's like we've been talking around. Well, mainly me because I played it a little earlier, and I'm not bragging about that. I'm just saying as a matter of course since I did the review.
Yeah, you're always bragging.
Well, I'm making a point to say I'm not because I find it so tacky and wretched when. People spend so much time bragging about how, well, if you remember the first time that I broke the news to the world that I had been the first greasy fingered.
I found it incredibly fun, and even the length didn't particularly bother me.
No.
It felt like just enough Portal.
I couldn't imagine it being longer, actually.
It's weird, because most of the forum posts I see always seem to start like, it's really short, but it's awesome! And it always starts off with that, it's really short. But.
And that's so annoying because it's like, do you ever stop to think it's awesome because it's short?
Exactly.
But it's short, but it's great. You know, I mean, and you see that
tedious. I think.
Every thread.
I can't wait to see. I can't wait till modders start making their own levels with this thing. Honestly,
aside from that, fuck the length. If you charge what they're charging on Steam for this thing,
right.
And you buy this game, it's worth your money. It's excellent because it's the length that it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. If it was too much longer, it would just become this series of test puzzles.
I thought it was long enough. And by the time you get to 19, that's it.
I had a complete gaming experience
in
one session. And like, how often does that happen? It was just like,
wow,
that was three hours, and
the payoff
it was awesome.
Is beautiful. You know, that it all builds up to just like a fucking amazing finale.
Yeah, and why are we resistant to this idea? It's like I've got all these other online games that we're talking about, multiplayer games that I'll be playing. So it's like, I mean, it's perfect. It's great. Yeah. Why? Hey, you feel satisfied when you go to a movie and it's an hour and a half, two hours long?
I was just about to bring that up.
Right. Totally. And you can have the opposite experience in movies too, right? I mean, this is just an old point. The 3-hour movie can feel like 6 hours,
or it can seem like 20 minutes too. It's just based on the quality. It's like finding the right length for what it is you want to do, and that's like a freedom that games generally just don't have. You don't make the length is determined in advance largely, or at least a suitable window of maximum hours to play.
There's a whole bunch of people. There have been is this game of the year? Threads everywhere, and a lot of people are saying, well, it can't because of the length.
It's too short.
And I absolutely fundamentally disagree with that. I do think it's one of the best games of the year. I don't give a shit that it was as short as it was.
It seems like people just always approach games as if they were some sort of like product that you could buy at the grocery store. Like, this contains only 4 ounces of gaming. How could it possibly be worth my time?
I can't believe it's not game.
Yeah, it's not fucking. It's not a bottle of Coke.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because of the price at times. Like, I can understand why people will impose different standards for something they're paying $60 on versus something they're paying $10 on. I understand it to some extent.
This arbitrary rubrics that gamers settle into, you know, when they want to evaluate the quality of things. I mean, half the time they're evaluating the value more than the quality.
Right.
But even when they want to evaluate the quality, it's so weird. And again, I emphasize the word arbitrary. In the IGN review, for example, the reviewer criticized Team Fortress 2 because, unlike Halo 3, you're unable to customize your character. If you have an engineer, you look like any other engineer. Mm-hmm. He wants to be able to put like a Taz tattoo or something on him. But yeah, again, it's like, and in the same way, here's another example I've used is when people, you know, come in to show a game and they're like, hey, this is a 10-player game or 12-player game. And everyone goes, what? Not 32? Not 64? Not 89? Yeah. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, a game should be designed to suit as many players as whatever they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, whatever
their goal is. So yeah, I mean, again, people just get trapped in these really, really bizarre and arbitrary, you know, grids that they evaluate things by, and it makes so little sense to me.
Yeah, a common one is, you know, number of maps in a multiplayer game. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Number of weapons, number of classes.
And, of course, you know, the journalists
which we are part of, but I try not to ask these questions. Is that being the first question out of your mouth in the interview? Well, how many maps does it have? You know, how about like one good one? That'd be fine.
This goes back.
It's like Team Fortress 2 has how many right now?
Right.
Six. And six awesome.
That was
plenty,
so vindicating.
They're all awesome.
Remember when Shadowrun was coming out and all the talk about Shadowrun was always, well, it has too few maps. It has too few maps. And I was like on the record saying, well, I think that's stupid because if the game itself isn't that good, who gives a shit about the maps? And I think people are focusing on the maps because it's the one of the objective things. It's got a number attached to it. So we can all agree that this is a deficiency. But again, like no one, partially to be fair with Team Fortress 2, because we all know that at least if you own the PC version, you're going to be getting maps. And I'm sure if you own 360, they're going to get them to you anyway. I'm sure
Valve will just
put them. Yeah. So that's there. But again, it's like, you're having so much fun. You want to like play and get good on each one there. You're thinking about this game's so fun. That's your first impression. And then you got to figure out why it's fun to you. But it's like, it's not because there's X number of maps, you know?
Right. If Shadowrun itself had been totally fun and the maps were good ones, nobody would have been complaining about how many there were.
They would have been, saying.
They would have just been playing it.
Right.
I think this is all.
And enough people would have played that they would have made new maps for them.
Which is what will happen with Team Fortress.
Yes.
It's all just another consequence of this weird like bullet point thing that we have with games, which I think is actually like a part of the way that games have been reviewed for a long time, to break them out into like how many guns does it have and how many levels does it have?
What are the new enemies?
Yeah. You know, like all the Halo coverage,
have you seen
which
interviews
was like
that too,
I want to know all the details of every Halo vehicle. Like that's the most like wanking thing I've ever heard of, you know? I'm sorry. But I just want to know about the experience of playing the game and like not all these little like fetishized objects. Mm-hmm. And we've broke it all apart into these little categories and now we can't see the forest for the trees ever, you know? Mm-hmm. It's really bizarre.
But this vehicle has eight wheels. and I'll give you an exclusive screen of that, and no other magazine has it.
Wow.
And if you press right mouse button, there's a smoke screen that comes out. No one else even knows that yet.
Oh.
You'd be the first.
Oh, and there's the cover. There's the cover story. Done.
So, all right, so back on Portal. How many hours did it take you guys to finish? Curiosity.
It's like the opposite of a comparing contest.
It kind of is. No, I'm saying because
it's like a golf score now.
I'm not bragging. No,
what's the par for that hole?
It took
me
a long time, which is why
I'm 35 minutes.
No, I'm not bragging. That's not why I'm bringing it up. Because it took me over 6 hours.
Well, most of us in Mensa claim, you know, 20-30 minute 20-30 minute.
I could only go by the Steam thing, 2.7 hours.
So that's pretty freaking fast.
Well, I think I took 4 or 5 hours.
And I'm blaming age for my 6 hours.
Yeah, I haven't made it into the level 19 yet, which I hear is the hell level.
Well, 18 and 19 are both hard.
Well, I'm pretty far into 18. And there's
in
one
fact,
point,
I got more stumped by 18 than 19.
Yeah. My excuse, the equivalent of it was cold, is that I was taking screenshots.
Okay.
Shrinkage.
Yeah. I was taking screenshots for the I was taking screenshots for the reviews.
I wanted to bring this up because Steam, you know, keeps track of the shit and
no pressure.
And it's just this thing about, we talked about it a little before we turned the mics on, the Steam community. I'm just finding it this sort of weird thing. It's like this kind of intrusion into my single player gaming experience that like I can be observed that way. And in fact, it's gonna sound like bullshit, but I left the game on overnight on Friday night. And so when I woke up the next morning, you know, it had logged on like 7 more hours of Portal than I really had been playing. It was just sitting on the pause screen. Yeah. That counted towards the time.
Oh, so that
and your score, too.
This is my story.
You have a score based on hours on Steam.
So yesterday I was playing Half-Life Episode 2 because I finished Portal that next day on Saturday. But on Sunday, I was playing Episode 2, and all of a sudden in the middle of that game, a Steam community window pops up, and it's some random dude who I accepted as a friend who's like, "Ha ha, dude, 17 hours on Portal, what a loser." Like, hey, fuck you, man. No, I don't know you.
You fell asleep when you were playing.
Yeah, I fell asleep. And then too, I was like, man, okay, it wasn't 17 hours. That's just how many hours the game was on. It didn't take me that long to get through. But then I thought, like, how weird it is that, like, you know, people can see you're in this single-player game.
It was
like kind of a
it was
phenomenon
on my mind while I was playing. I'm just like,
people are going to know. I better go fast here. No time to explore. I can explore later.
Right. It's a weird thing about Steam. I mean, I love Steam. I'm still definitely on the bandwagon, but it was weird that, like, first of all, that my single-player game could be – my performance could be observed. But then also, while I'm playing another single-player game, someone could just randomly come on and diss me about the other game I was playing.
That element work is so perfectly suited to Portal's narrative, though, and its themes. And
it really is.
Oh, it totally is, right.
Perfect, yeah, confluence of
ideas.
Right,
the intelligence test.
yeah, and just the fact that, yeah, you're a guinea pig. I mean, you're being observed, and you don't, you know.
Right.
You're communicating through indirectly through your actions.
Can you clear your score? Is there a way to, like, reset your... Or is that just controlled on Valve's end?
But seriously, guys, can I?
No, really, it doesn't bother me.
They have a pill for this.
Valve is prepping us for the Combine invasion. They're going to use this information to figure out where you're going.
Me and that EA exec failed.
You can just tell everyone that you needed to spend some quality time with your companion, Q.
the portal equivalent of the Cialis.
Yeah. I'm thinking of not Cialis, but I'm thinking of, like, unit lengthener. unit lengthening pills.
Yeah.
Can I say about Portal that I think the cake is a lie is now going to be like the most classic video game saying. Like, I can imagine thinking about that every time I finish a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm sure the shirts are already made, right?
This is a year that also gave us Would You Kindly, so it's a good year for...
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Good stuff.
I enjoy Portal. What about... you got some other spam when you were... when you're playing.
Huh? Oh, from you? Yeah, well, that was sitting there waiting for me the next day, along with Portal that was on all night.
I was trying to bombard you.
Sure. Yeah, I had spam from Sean. He had, like, rap rants sitting on my window. I got to frickin' disable Steam.
Are those the lyrics that came up on the top of this show?
Yeah, I was just facing some of them as I was writing them to him. And then you get, like, we were talking about this, too. You get people, and it's like, no... You know, it's no knock on them. It's like, hey, I'm glad people want to add me in their friends list. But then you get a message, and it's like, hey. And you say, okay, how you do? And then you say, like, who are you? And then they just go, oh, my God, you don't know how it feels to be talking to an editor of a magazine. And then it's, like, kind of awkward, you know. Like I said earlier, you should feel the same way when you talk to anyone. You know, the guy who, like, fries your fries at Jack in the Box or something, you know? Like, I mean...
You made these fries? I never thought I'd get to talk to you, sir. Yeah.
The salting job was awesome.
They're delicious.
It's kind of cool, but I mean, you feel like such a charlatan.
My policy with that has been, if I agree to accept anybody as a friend, because of course it's an option on Steam, then I don't mind if anybody says hi, but I mean, it's a little weird. I guess you guys told me before we turned it on, you can, like, show that you're offline or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's a little annoying if I'm playing a single
player. It's not that bad, and those people aren't idiots,
no,
but
I'm
it's
not
like
trying to,
that feeling, you know, like, say you just graduated high school, and then the next year you patrol the parking lot and you got, like, a new Camaro or something. Like, that's kind of like, that's the level of status I feel is being conferred upon.
Well, yeah, so I know.
And you're like, okay, this is cool, kids. And then, like, look around to make sure no other adults are seeing it, you know?
That's actually a pretty fair analogy, man.
You're the coolest nerd in the room.
I see myself with that, like, a really pet greasy mustache, like, rolling around. Yeah.
No, I just, I mean, to me, it's not about quote unquote celebrity.
It's more about just
people talking when I'm trying to play a game. It's more about that.
It's yeah,
to me, it's more about dick pics. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'm not saying don't PM me. And in fact, most people who have, because I guess you can tell if they're playing, right? It says you're now playing. Most people have said, like, hey, sorry to bother you while you're playing. Which is cool.
Oh, man, I just got...
Yeah, but you are.
Just got what? Rude to tell you. I was just thinking, I'm like, most of the people on our friends list are shared right now, so I'm going to arrange, like, to get everyone to bombard you next time.
Oh, thanks.
With some kind of... I'll have to think of some theme. I've already ruined it now, but maybe I can find another way to...
Yeah, I know. I'm only asking for it now.
Incoming meme. Just won't...
Yeah. Great. Now uninstalling Steam.
or perpetually offline.
So
what else do we got,
Bobito? Before we come back, because we got a lot of, we should stretch the now playing out since we have so much of it. Week before last, Bobito wanted to tell a tale from Texas, and now's your shot. You only got one shot. What would you do?
Why didn't you tell it last time?
We ran out of time. Remember?
Oh,
we were crunched.
We got oodles of it now.
Yeah. Well, I'd gone down to Plano, Texas, which is actually where my wife grew up, but it's where Gearbox has their offices. So that was kind of surreal to visit the town where I went to. I finished high school and everything, and there's actually games being made and crazy stuff to do. But one of the things
to take a business trip to your high school.
Yeah,
town.
It was weird and. And it was in they're in the top four floors of the Bank of America building in Plano, which is the tallest building in Plano, Texas. You know, like 17 floors or something. So they have, you know, status there. But one of the things I did was I went out and shot some guns with Colonel Antal, the military advisor guy.
Guy they bring out all the time?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But
I'm not dissing him. He's kind of scary.
Yeah, it was.
That's the guy who Mark Rain, when he was giving a demo, and Mark Rain was sitting there, and Antal was talking about how it was an emotional roller coaster, and Rain said that. He just commented on the fact that John used to use those very same hands to choke the life out of men, and at this point, he's using them to hide his tears from playing his own video game. that's the perspective on.
Oh my god! Yeah,
wow.
Awesome.
Complete portrait of this character. No?
Yeah. He's got an unusual job there. They've got him writing a couple of books. One of them has the Brothers in Arms name, like a historical fiction book.
That is pretty
historical
fucking
fiction,
weird, man.
And then like a.
I gotta say, I think I object to this now. Now it's going a little too far.
Yeah. Well.
Don't tell that
this,
to
this is what.
Well, they're supposed to be basing, like, they're basing this game on Hell's Highway, the book.
Yeah.
And now they're. I mean, like, what the hell? It's coming out the other side of the Looking Glass now as a fictionalized World War II story based on a game?
It's not.
Give me a fucking break.
Let me play devil's advocate and say that when they found the guy, I guess he'd written a couple of historical fiction books that they had read and enjoyed, and so that's why they sought him out to begin with. Mm-hmm. And so that's what he does in general, and I guess that they're just tying it in with the Brothers in Arms thing. I don't think that it has anything to do with the game necessarily.
Just the name.
Just the name.
And they are working on a musical too, I hear.
But he's also doing like some a nonfiction book, which I didn't quite catch the gist of. But anyway, we go out to this gun range a couple miles away from their office to shoot some, like, a World War II, like, M1 and a couple other guns. And we go in there, and, of course, it's fucking bizarre because it's a Texas gun shop, and the guys behind the counter have guns and holsters on them.
Yeah.
Because you're allowed to wear that, and that's funny or whatever. But we're standing around waiting for our lane, and the guys who work at the shop know Antal and all the Gearbox people because they bring people over to shoot all the time.
Yeah.
And they start pitching games at him. Like, what? Like, the, like little young guys, like, you guys need to make a game about the Marines, man. You got to make a Marines game. And, you know, just giving him all this stuff. And so Antal goes into this explanation of, this is what Brothers in Arms is all about. And he starts talking about how, you know, it's all about giving you like 8 days of a military experience. And they're going to, you know, take Brothers in Arms from, you know, World War II all the way up to modern day someday. And they were going to do all these different games. And I made this offhand comment, you know, that I didn't really, it came out wrong. I said, yeah, if you did Brothers in Arms Baghdad, it would be like 7 days of playing Xbox followed by 1 day of getting blown up. And it was so fucking awkward because what I meant to comment on was just that, you know, it's notoriously boring.
Explain
over there.
The waiting around time.
I used to read EGM's letters for them, right? And we would get letters all the time from soldiers who would say that, you know, it's really boring and they spend most of their time sitting in the barracks playing video games and stuff.
Right.
And,
right. Yeah, we get those letters too. We get that about this podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you for entertaining us because we sit around in, you know.
And you're not commenting. There's no value statement there. You're just
Just saying.
Right. I've heard the that of it. There's in a all lot of combat, waiting.
But I think what he saw when I said it was like he knew that I was, you know, that I live in Berkeley, California.
Right.
So when he heard that, I think he thought it was a, you know, a jab.
Immediately.
And so he like launched into a defense of it. And I'm trying to like,
of what? Of the war?
How we got to stick it out and blah, blah, blah. And I'm trying not to even get into the argument because.
Well, these guys are wearing guns.
Yeah. Well, and even like their Gearbox's PR was with us and her, you know, her husband. friend is in Baghdad and stuff. Right. And I don't even want to have this conversation. Right. I'm not trying to offend anyone. And it was just really fucking awkward. And I'm always having these awkward things happen to me. I don't know why.
Did anyone thought they were like, were they like yelling at you?
No, it was basically that I got
goddamn
a lecture.
Goddamn problem.
I got a lecture all the way back to the office in the truck.
Did anyone tell you to go to Cuba?
No, I was not fighting it. I was just like, uh-huh, yep, troop, yep, okay.
Did you get a chance to explain them, like, about the whole...
Yeah, I think I tried to, but I think the
idea...
We
know what you meant, you hippie!
...of some long-haired hippie like myself, not cool.
Yeah, that's a good, I like that. It's a bull rat issue right there.
But he was a nice guy, and it was a lot more. It felt a lot more safe shooting guns around somebody who actually like is teaching me what to do.
Oh,
than
absolutely.
The time that I shot guns with Sean Elliott and like the EGM crew,
I taught you
and they're
well.
Shooting like fucking dirty hairy guns and like laughing, like
pointing it at each other's faces.
Like it's a fucking episode.
I got
Jackass
the picture on my cell phone. I got the picture on my cell phone of the target with his nuts shot out.
No, I mean Sean was so being bad. Good, but it definitely felt.
It was Sean, baby, and
yeah,
that was really the. I was just hey, I was.
It
chill,
felt
man.
A little frat house.
I was actually. Actually mad because the people next to us had Doomcock, which is like it's the Smith and Wesson Model 50, Model 500, right? I'm getting it wrong, and it's Model 500. And it's a 50 caliber revolver, and
all of a sudden it's gun talk.
It's entirely
the hell.
Yeah, but real quick, because it's like it's part of the mentality to paint you a picture if you've never been to ranges. It's like there's always some family there, and they got pride and joy. And it's like in this case, it was the Smith and Wesson 500. And if you've seen it, it makes like. It makes the Dirty Harry Magnum look like a toy.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. It's like a gun. It's from a video game. It's a gun from a video game.
Huh.
And it's the most, it sounds like, a cannon going off every time. And I was actually like, okay, this is annoying. Like, because we're trying to, like, shoot. And I guess it was good field conditions if you wanted to see how you could fire under insane distraction. But
it was really, because it wasn't just loud, it would actually like split the air around you.
Yeah.
So it would physically shake you, and you're sitting there trying to shoot, and just every minute you'd hear this giant bang and shake your body. And by the time I left, I felt like I had like post traumatic stress syndrome or something. I was just like,
you needed to get back to Berkeley and eat some mashed yeast.
Feel better.
Yeah.
Is that one of those guns that like pierce an engine block or something or?
No. I doubt this would fire from that. I mean, you're probably thinking of a rifle version of 50 caliber, but this thing, because of the barrel and stuff, I bet that the slug, it's got to slow down after any significant distance.
I'm just like, why would you have this kind of weapon at
home?
Yeah,
really.
I know
more about the Needler.
Well, the same reason if you're like, no, should we get the Expedition or the Excursion?
Yeah, sure.
Or the Yukon.
Yeah.
It's bigger. That one's bigger.
All right.
Get that one.
We're getting some hate mail now.
Yeah, we are. I've only been in a gun shop once, and it's because an old freelancer of ours, Rafael Liberatore, great guy, who has a military background and
Special Forces.
Lots of experience in Special Forces. And he took Robert Coffey and I out shooting in San Diego, and he brought us into a gun shop to use their indoor range. And we didn't have to, like, check out guns there because he had, like, an entire arsenal
stored there
in his house.
Oh, that he brought.
Yeah, we went down into his secret locked-up room where he had, like, it was, like, scary. It was, like, something out of, like a 24 terrorist scene, grab the machine guns. That's what it was like. So we loaded up this whole locker thing full of guns, and we drove over to this shop, and I'd never been in a gun shop before because I'm just not that kind of person. And but the thing that I remember the most was as we were in the gun shop and filling out the little form to use the range, they had for sale behind the counter targets, paper targets to use. And I'm used to, like, from Boy Scouts, back in the day, they had, like, just the circles, your old standard bullseye. They had target sheets that were, like, they were silhouettes of different ethnicities.
I thought I was waiting for the Osama thing. I'm like, well
it was kind of like
before that.
And
depending on the decade in which you go to the range, then it was Hussein, and then it was Khomeini, and then it was
Right. Well, I mean, that's what I mean. I don't mean they had like,
would you like to shoot a Jew today? It wasn't like that. I mean, there was all like variations on like, you know, but it was like the silhouette was like clearly an Arabic guy. You know,
how can you tell with the silhouette? Was he wearing like
certain clothing?
Like, yeah, and the hat and the big beard and
a kebab in his hand. Dude, it's like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it was obvious. So
yeah.
You're going to get in trouble. Someone's going to say, hey, if you join the armed forces now and you're going to a combat zone,
there's a reasonable likelihood that
silhouette will resemble
I'm not making any judgment about it. I'm saying it was startling to me because I'd never been in a gun shop before.
Last gun.
It's startling to fire any gun when you realize what it can do and realize what it's made for. It's a sobering experience.
It is. Yeah. They're heavy and powerful.
I hadn't shot any handguns until I went with John, and the thing I realized is that if I'm ever like stuck up by someone and I'm like more than 6 feet away, I'm gonna fucking run because they're not gonna hit me. Like
they will though,
man.
Just because you couldn't fire it,
they've been playing Mad Dog McCree. They're ready for that shit.
I think it takes pretty good practice,
right,
to be a good
but
shot.
Most, that's
and I think
thing.
A lot. I think a lot of
guns
fools
go
like robbing
regular.
People on the street with guns aren't really getting a lot of target practice,
right?
You
try running then.
Wait, if you had the gun yourself, you wouldn't shoot, you would run?
Oh, what? No, if I was being robbed. I just mean that it's robbed. So hard to really like hit someone with a...
Or walk sideways.
It's a hell of a lot harder with a handgun than you would think, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty unsteady. Like, compared to firing a rifle, like I'm a really good shot with a rifle.
Maybe we should try this out. Let's go rob some people, see how well we do.
Test, like, we'll do... 40% will run, 40% will stay, and then we'll have a control group who we just shoot.
They're just staying. That's a false control.
Who's going to have the clipboard on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan. I'll operate the gun.
Have you ever shot a gun?
I have not. I'm like you.
Sean Malloy? Well, yeah. I've shot one, but it was very odd.
Never did.
You should shoot a gun just to know how to shoot it, just in case, like, I mean, it's a life skill, like, you don't want to not know how to
shoot a gun. Just in case, what does that mean, if you don't own one?
Well, what if
one falls on the ground?
You've played enough video games to know that in the first level, someone goes, here, take this gun.
All right. Or I'm going to find one on the ground.
Yeah. And
I'll
help it loose.
Or a
gun will find its way to you after a wrench or something.
Oh, thank God, I've upgraded from this wrench now that this guy's chasing me.
There's enough out there that, you know, during World War IV, surely they'll scatter across the road. And
they all have aim assist these days, right?
Actually,
yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
just check any chest. You're going to find
one. When the zombies attack.
Uh-huh. Just make sure it has an alt fire on it for your second mouse button. Mm-hmm. Are we done? Are we due for a break yet?
Sure, yes.
All right. We're taking a break.
To eat a cookie.
3, 2, 1.
Listen to EGM Live, the weekly podcast for Electronic Gaming Monthly, available every Monday for download at egmlive.oneup.com or podcast.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
Sweep the leg!
Sweep the leg, Johnny.
Sweep the leg!
We're back! I gotta say, somebody wrote me last week and asked me about these breaks we have. He's like, do you guys really take a break or do you just sit there and then like so we could stick a commercial in? And the answer is kind of both. Sometimes we don't. There's no break at all. This time there was about 2 minutes of talking. So there's your transparent behind-the-scenes look.
Isn't that fascinating? Here's what you missed.
And we all ate cookies.
This is our commentary track.
Behind the curtain.
Yeah, this is the commentary. Yeah.
I told Ryan that his response to have you ever fired a gun should have been to grab his sack and say, I handle the only gun I need well enough.
And he doesn't shoot blanks.
And then I had
which would have actually been funny if Ryan. Which would have been funny if Ryan had said it with all, you know.
And then I had to tell Sean that saying grab your sack to Ryan is a hostile work environment. Not to do that again.
That's why I said satchel. The kinds of things that Ryan says, it seems like he's always only ever talking about touching his penis. Like that's pretty much all you ever talk about.
A lot of people tell me that.
I mean, that's why you keep it kind of quiet, because otherwise we'd just be talking about that all the time.
It's true.
Well, there you go.
Wow. I didn't know you were going that way.
He knows the secret to my silence.
What's inside Ryan's head?
Jeff is red right now, by the way.
It's hot in here.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to read was it just last week or 2 weeks ago? Last week.
Last week.
We talked about a news story about some folks who were at a church who were bringing kids in to play Halo 3 in church, and we talked about different ramifications of that. And I don't want to go into all that again, but a guy wrote me a nice letter that I got that I wanted to just read with his perspective, a guy named Dan Davis. So thanks, Dan, for writing. And he wrote, with Halo at church, I want you to know I used to help out in a youth group at a church I attended, and we had video game nights. They were usually all-nighters, and we would bring in a bunch of TVs and game consoles and just kick back and play games with the kids and their friends. We never used this as a bait-and-switch type ministry. We did this because, one, we and the kids like video games, and two, it was something for them to do on a Friday night. We didn't even have a message or a talk or anything. It was all done in fun and not used to, quote, lure people into the church. Kids are smart, and they can see past the old bait-and-switch. What we did was far more genuine. We showed that you can be a very normal person who was a Christian and who still played games. That is, we showed that we were capable of having fun while just chilling out. There were no hidden agendas involved, and so I am sure we did reach some kids because our motives were authentic. Again, kids aren't stupid, and they are not as easily tricked as some of us adults think that they are. So I thought that was cool.
Except kids are stupid.
Cool. Other than that fundamental flaw.
And easily tricked.
Yeah. He was trying to trick me into thinking he was cool, so I joined his church. I'm on to you, Dan Davis.
No, thanks. I appreciated that. So, anyway, that's that.
Cool.
What else have we got?
So,
what you playing?
How about a couple demos just came out?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Our last couple podcast big and this one.
Who else played UT and COD this weekend? Anyone?
I did. Bueller? Anyone? Sean Elliott did. Yeah, Call of Duty 4 and Unreal Tournament 3. Both demos went up. Was it just the PC demos that went up?
I think so. I didn't check the console versions.
Yeah, actually, yes,
just,
it was.
Just PC?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I had played a bunch of Call of Duty 4 on Xbox multiplayer when that came out. But I have not played the PC demo.
You know, the PC demo single player.
Yeah, the PC demo single player, and they totally should have released the multiplayer demo instead, if you ask me.
What was up with it?
It's just, Sean and I were talking about this earlier today, and I I got to agree with him on this, is that it's kind of the same old tricks, a really scripted sequence, it kind of walks you through a really early part of the game. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not anything it's like the stuff you'd seen in COD and COD 2, and it's just...
But lest we forget, this was the game that, like, wowed the game critics at E3, and I think won Game of the Show, right?
It's pretty.
And at that point, they were showing just a single player.
And it's pretty. A review's pretty. Come out for it, and it's got a 10.
Oh, it got a 10,
and again,
yeah.
I can't challenge any of that based on this demo, yeah. Which is a very small sample of gameplay.
But I played a bit of the multiplayer on the PC, like at a recent Activision event, and I think it would have benefited a lot more from showing off how much the multiplayer had changed since the last couple, revisions, from the previous games.
Well, I was actually not interested in the game until I played the multiplayer on Xbox Live. And then I was really into that whole leveling up experience. I thought that was super fun. But I can't comment on the single player. And then what was up with Unreal Tournament?
I didn't get to talk about
it. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go.
I think that, yeah, basically when you play it, part of the thing is that there's all this to do about this is a new context. This is modern warfare. You're used to World War II, and we're, change paradigms on this shit. So you play it, and yeah, it's very much a reskinned Call of Duty 2 level. Mm-hmm. The issue here, though, is that Call of Duty 2 varied between levels. The original levels were almost identical to those in the first Call of Duty and its expansion, and then they started mixing up the formula later on. So I'm hoping this is basically another case of that, because this level is just a super hyperlinear move through, an environment that you could change it and say it's North Africa instead of, somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing it's in the Arabian Peninsula. And, the guys come out and you shoot them. There's not really so much AI, because the way you fight is like you move forward, you stop, you shoot them, all the guys that pop up, and then you move forward again. objectives, I've bitched about it before, so I'll go short on it, but they're very much about going up to an object or an area and pressing a key, a glowing area and pressing a key. Yeah. So, for example, you know, you see the AA gun, and you know you have grenades or something, or, you know, if you had satchels, you don't throw those over a fence because you actually go around another way and you see it's there, but you go up and you press a button on it. That one wasn't so bad. I knew that was going to happen, but then what after that, what the game wants you to do is clear some people out of this house.
The end of the level.
And it doesn't make sense because it's basically a couple machine guns set up behind boards in this house. Now, the game has already taught you that you can fire through materials based on, you know, and the penetration properties will vary depending on the material and the weapon you're using. So they've taught you to shoot through walls, and then there's some plywood blocking an MG nest, and suddenly shooting through that does nothing whatsoever. And then you have what I stood there for about 5 minutes just to test it, and this is not how anyone in their right mind is going to play the game. Maybe someone will, though. And I found, you know, it looked like an infinite spawn-in where guys continue to come on the balcony with RPGs, and you shoot them, and then they come back again. Really what it's trying to do is urge you on to the glowing part on the ground where you're supposed to press F, and that's to have an attack helicopter come in, a Cobra gunship, and blow the building away. Meanwhile, we have a tank that I'd been escorting already that's just sitting in the back of the field. I don't know why. It doesn't make sense. Well, shoot the fucking building. I guess suddenly my bullets don't shoot through plywood anymore. Maybe you could do it. No, but because you can't go to a circle and press F and tell a tank to shoot a shell. And whereas you can call. Maybe you get better cell phone reception in this glowing circle, though. So that stuff, notwithstanding, the game looks phenomenal. It looks fantastic. But that kind of stuff, it's getting old and it's definitely not new. And then the other problem, before I kick it back to Darren, is that when you die, and this is a game worth dying in because you get some hot quotes every time you die. And some of them, you know, like
military wisdom.
Like, I got like a kernel of wisdom from Condi Rice. I just kill myself. And it drops up like a Condi Rice quote. And she's telling me about how, you know, war has changed and it's a whole new war. And I'm like, bitch, you're full of shit. I just played this stuff. It's the same goddamn war.
Wow.
But,
wrong in the real world, wrong in the virtual world. Amazing.
Oh, man.
That's a track record.
Yeah. I'm just going to add on two quick things to what you were just saying. Totally agree with everything. I actually missed that glowing part to call in the attack choppers because I kept like, you know, because I was so used to the linear format, I was like looking forward to a way to get into this house because earlier in the
scream,
level.
You didn't notice the dude screaming at you? Go over to the flashing light! Press the goddamn button! Sergeant Dick Throat. Sergeant Dick Throat's in the background yelling at you the whole time.
He's screaming at you to call in for the IR for the choppers, but I'm like, I was so far ahead by the time that point came up. So I'm like, okay, I figure maybe I have to like run up beside the house or drop a marker somewhere.
Dude, you got to make a better excuse from that. Tell me you're contemplating the wisdom of like Condi Rice or...
No, I was already up at the building. I was already like ready to press the charge in and kind of take them out from the inside. I wasn't looking behind me.
You can't
get
in the building. It's blocked off by a fence.
And if you look around to the left side, there's this arbitrary pile of rubble that you can climb through like on every other part of that level, but suddenly you can't go over it there.
Yeah. I hate that kind of
game. That's total horseshit.
It sounds like you guys are just complaining that the roller coaster has tracks.
Exactly. Wow.
That's kind of it.
I have to say it was fun, and so much of it on the strength of the presentation, on the scripting for a single playthrough, you know, on the first playthrough, fantastic scripting. And it's just that it's now becoming, you know, the shooter space, like all spaces in video game genres, like they just evolve so rapidly, and it's so easy to go from being state-of-the-art 1 year to seeming like the band that keeps re-recording the same album year after year after year, you know. And again, this is just the smallest demo,
right?
Don't even consider changing your buying decision based on whatever shit I'm talking right now.
Right. I mean, there's a long history of demos not being representative of, and in fact, doing a disservice to the game.
And it's likely, this out of context slice of hand holding. Maybe
you could have taken a slice
one
of any awesome game. And it could look shitty.
Well, I think
you could find a super tedious moment in episode 2.
Oh, exactly.
Of which it does have some, and you would think that game.
I can totally picture a big part of the decision making process in selecting a demo is picking something that's really easy to get into.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It probably serves the equivalent of the tutorial level now because now it's a little bit old to start you in the goddamn firing range and then make you run, you know, teach you to crawl, teach you to crouch, teach you to jump. And
congratulations, soldier! You know how to duck now.
Yeah. So I think I'm thinking that it's got to
to be that.
Right.
But we'll see.
And the big
we'll
thing
see.
They've been talking about for this game is that how like the later levels are so open-ended and like, or at least have like these choke, like more choke points that kind of lead you down different areas. And I'm looking forward to that. And I definitely did. I mean, I saw some of that here, but not much.
I thought that was a good point that Robert made though about the roller coaster tracks. I mean, because really like, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I was thinking about Half-Life Episode 2, which I'm about halfway through now, and I'm liking it a lot. But, like, really, you know, how is it different than what you're talking about, really?
Because we're not – I mean, we're complaining that not so much that the roller coaster has tracks, but we're complaining that, say, it's, like, 2007, and if, like, this one theme park, all it does is keep rebuilding the same wooden coaster, uh-huh. Everyone else has got – like that fucked up half pipe one I told you about from Denver,
right.
Colorado.
Right.
Give me that shit, man.
Right. Also, I mean, really, Half-Life doesn't, they don't have the like glowing button. Like, there's still a puzzle to figure out. Yeah. Right. They don't just say, walk up to this thing and click this thing.
Right.
Well, I guess my only beef throughout the whole thing, I enjoyed it. I mean, granted, it was a short demo, and I know it's a very small slice, but like Sean was pointing out, they use one set of logic throughout the entire area, mm-hmm. and then you get to the end and you're like, you're trying to apply that same logic and you have to like pull back and look for the glowing circle on the ground.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Half-Life does a great job of at least making you have to think through. In fact, when I was playing last night, I was thinking, this is much more, especially after just having played the Halo 3 campaign, it's much more a puzzle game, really, than a shooter at this point.
Yeah, Half-Life. I think maybe you might be reading a lot of message boards and you're backing down. Okay.
No. This is all me.
All right.
This is me and my opinion, sir.
What is this?
I'm not dissing it.
I'm not saying that that's a bad thing.
But people go, I mean, what happens is like there will be like sub pockets of consensus, you know, where someone says, well, the shooting's shit in the game. The guns aren't powerful.
I'm not saying
the AI
shit.
Is dog shit. And then there will be others that say, oh, this, that, and other thing. And same way that, you know, I take positions on Halo and this and that. And what I would just say, what happens, I was joking.
No, that's fine.
Jeff of it. But I think a lot of people, when they get used to seeing this so long, they sort of let message board consensus inform their opinion.
But I'm not, because I'm not making a judgment call. In fact, I actually like the shooting and the weapons in Half-Life. Mm-hmm. It just struck me after playing a game that was so very combat heavy, which is Halo, that there's long stretches in Half-Life Episode 2 where you're actually not shooting anything. And I'm not complaining.
I think it's fun.
I like that a lot.
That was exactly what I was sort of trying to celebrate in my review for that game, is just the pacing, because they have so many options and they're able to mix them up, you know, by the 20-minute intervals.
But I just got further than that, but last night I did the bridge thing. I don't want to... have
I'm
any spoilers. Right, I'm not going to, but there's a bridge puzzle. You have to get across a bridge.
That puzzle, no
And that
other...
was so fun. And it had nothing to do with shooting anything.
And every hint is communicated solely through the environment.
Absolutely it is.
And that takes that takes two things. It takes a faith in your audience's intelligence, mm-hmm. and ability to solve problems, but an even greater faith in your ability to create challenges and to suggest solutions through the puzzles themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the classic one of a grenade jump. Let's just say that. And I mentioned in my review a few instances of puzzles where no other developer, and to my awareness, would even attempt these puzzles in the absence of some other character or text or something that you could go back to that explicitly said, hey, why don't you try this, dipshit? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, where they entirely everything... See, can I spoil it and just talk about this one room?
Okay.
Which room?
I'll just hate you forever.
There's a room where you use a grenade to jump somewhere. But so what happens is...
Totally blue.
I don't think I'm there yet, Ben.
This is... You guys got to finish this game. We're not going to keep talking about
episode one.
Goddamn Orange Box.
I hadn't played
Box.
Episode one yet, so I had to play that.
Okay. Well, anyway, go back. But when you do get to a part and you use a grenade to jump, and it's not... Look around and see what they did to communicate to you that that would be a possibility. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, for a mainstream game to even have that mechanic, use your grenade to jump somewhere.
Right.
I mean, again, that would be in this particular instance, that's not a behavior that they've been teaching you the way that, like, we've been teaching players that they can move latches or crates with a gravity gun in a neutral environment where they just fuck with stuff, and then we have them do it again and ramp it up. It's like, this is it. This is the one time only time you've ever had to do this. Mm-hmm. But we're going to find a way to communicate this to you through the environment.
Right.
It's just like, I just really appreciate that. I don't think that's like necessary to have a good game. Not at all. But I think I love it when it's there. I love to see that happen.
I think there are a lot of leaps like that in Portal, where you know the basic rules, but when you finally discover how to get past a certain point, it's really like a one-time thing. You're like, mm-hmm. oh shit!
It's the difference between you see the movie. Yeah, this came up in the Gears of War cover story I wrote, where you see some movies and they bring in a character later on, and they got to remind you that, oh, this is someone you saw before, and so they just have all these heavy-handed things. They'll throw a flashback in, mm-hmm. or they have some person's got a big scar in the same spot or something like that. And then there's those movies that when they all just sort of seamlessly come together and you feel smarter for watching them because you're like, hey, I wonder if the next guy figured that out. He probably mm-hmm. did, and that's the great thing about it, but it's just mm-hmm. done so well that the audience feels, you know, rewarded for it.
Yeah, Portal's brilliant at that. I mean, that's why when you get up to like 18 and 19 and then you're just kind of intuitively doing these tricks,
crazy shit,
you had to totally figure out on your own.
And if you were to explain,
you never would have thought of. It really trains you.
And if you had to explain that, like say that moment someone called you over, hey, come over here, Jeff, can you tell me how to do this?
Right.
You would only be able to do it by like pointing and like, here, let me just show you. You know?
Yeah.
And it's right because you're thinking, when you're solving a problem in such a way that you're a problem that you're not used to solving.
I was saying to a couple of you guys at lunch that like this is the first game in a while, Portal, where I share an office with my wife and she's often doing like actual important things while I'm goofing off with games in the same room. But I had Portal up on the screen and I was like talking out loud to myself, like trying to figure out. I'd be like looking at the room, like going like, okay, I got to move the thing over there and then shoot the thing here. And then she's like, what are you working on?
Game.
But really.
You're not the Lord of the Rings.
And now the circle is complete.
but I loved it. And then coming up with the solution is so satisfying. And I feel that way even in episode two. And what's so cool about the Half-Life universe to me has always been like they feel very like real world solutions. Like you really can go like, okay, they're telling me I have to get out of there, out of that window in this room, and it seems impossible. Well, let me look around the room and see what I have to work with.
Yeah.
And the answer is always something logical. Mm-hmm. You know, it never is something where you would go, huh? Where you'd have to look on GameFAQs to figure it out because it's some bullshit.
And there are multiple ways, you know, in many cases.
I think Valve is really like onto some sort of amazing sort of game design minimalism. I mean, Portal being like the ultimate example of that, you know, give you one gun, set you in a laboratory where everything's like just super clean.
The AAA minimalism is the difference, because that minimalism has been sort of cultivated in the, you know, the casual gaming space and the download space.
Yeah. But they use it for such amazing impact. Like the first time you ever come upon a little room with the messages and stuff after you've been in the lab rat environment, you're like, whoa, holy shit. It's like a huge thing, you know? And the less they try to like impress you with giant bang explosion crazy shit, mm-hmm. the more it's impressive when something happens.
Yeah, it's like when you see – it's like the quiet – it's a quiet discovery. Like say if you're in your own house and something that should be in one place is moved and you're trying to account for it.
Yeah.
You know, or if you're like looking through – you know, like if you're in Ryan's room looking through his lingerie drawer.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. I'm fired.
He's going to pull his.
Off to work environment.
I was going to say Jeff. Why did I turn to Ryan? I wanted to bring you into the conversation.
Ryan's definitely a gimp suit kind of guy. Not a great guy. Something was like leather. Suit. Like a really not, I'm not rubber. Not trashy. Like
no, classy.
Leather. So classy, like
zippers. That's how you think of Ryan.
You're just digging the hole deeper.
I think
man.
That's your problem.
Someone who listens to our podcast was telling me that, man, you guys are mean to Ryan, and I'm like, no, we're not. Yeah. We're fucking mean to Ryan.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Didn't realize until today.
So let's go back to the original.
Time to fight back.
That's
love you,
totally
Ryan.
An example of how men try to socialize, though, where it's like, Ryan's not talking. How do I get him to talk? Be a dick. Punch him in the arm until he yells. Yeah. Like,
you're kind of a woman, aren't you, Ryan? What do you got to say about that?
Why are you so quiet?
Just like high school.
It's more like
junior high school.
Yeah, you're being generous.
So. Okay, apologies to Ryan.
Dude, I still love mama jokes, man. Ask those who play online with me. I get some good mama jokes in. Well, it's like there's so many options. Once you tell yourself,
Okay, Mama if jokes? Opportunity arises, then mama joke, then they always come. Like you're playing, you know, Company Heroes, and someone's like, come on, we got to push harder. Like,
that's what I told your mom.
Come on, bitches, push like your mom on the toilet. And like, you know, I mean, it's like, what? It's the dumbest thing, but it's kind of... it's kind of rewarding. Or you'll see like, dude, look at this Operation Man Train. Cause there's like someone's basically turning their soldiers into Zerglings. There's like a dozen of them. I'm like, dude, they're all on the way to your mom's house. They're like, I mean, there's dumb, but
I think that One Up ought to do a show about Sean and his various online friends playing games because it would be the modern Beavis and Butthead. When I play games with Sean and I've got him on TeamSpeak and he's saying all this crazy shit, I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. Shit, dude, the story of Wang Wang, did that fucking blow your mind?
Well, what about Wang? What about Wang Wang?
Don't even try to fucking explain this.
I'm going to do it.
No. He tried to explain this to me.
Do we have to turn the tape off?
Yeah, no. It's the story of Wang Wang. It's unknowable. Him and Rory were trying to explain to me this elaborate inside joke. It took like 15 minutes.
Was it funny at the end?
No, I was just like...
we don't have that kind of time.
What the fuck are you guys talking about?
I can give you the 5-second... Cliff's Notes version of the legacy of Wang Wang.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so Wang Wang, first of all, is... not 5 seconds. Let's start the clock.
Start the clock. Here we go.
Wang Wang is a tiny Filipino... martial artist and performer. He started in spy movies as
Agent
00. Yep. Okay. And you can YouTube search Wang Wang. Find out stuff about him. There's raps about him. So we're watching it, and we're like hypothesizing on his... biological origins, his dietary habits, his, you know, reproductive process, all these other things. And what we figured out was that he, okay, oh my God, dude, I can't believe I'm going to try to explain this shit.
No,
Wang Wang, like, he doesn't, so reproductive organs, he has a cloaca. He's very bird-like. And he accidentally became impregnated by sitting on a public toilet one time.
Where is this going?
Nowhere. It's going to make you wish that you were on drugs.
His diet. So he's a symbiotic organism. He feeds on a diet consisting of Brazil, Mongongo, and these nuts. So he clings there. But for his host organism, the benefit he provides is an enhanced ability to digest corn, and
he's a quado.
This is utter fucking nonsense.
It really is.
I'll just cut it there. But if you're ever interested, write me. I can tell you like how the story of, you know, how Wang Wang was born, the origins of his morphology, sexual dimorphism in the Wang Wang species.
Okay, so is this stuff that evolved over TeamSpeak? How did this?
I think
so. Do you have an FAQ on this?
It was obviously something that was a product of a long night of him gaming with Rory. And he tried to explain the entire joke to me in 5 minutes, and it was like a different language.
I know. Yeah. It's just because you babble. We're on there, and we just babble as we're playing.
I have to say that I did play some Team Fortress 2 with you. I don't know what night that was in the last few nights, and I was laughing my head off. I had to move the mic away from my head because he was playing as Ralphie, basically. And he sucks these guys in so bad. You have this innate ability to get people totally mad at you and want to boot you from the server. And in fact, you did. You got booted.
I was like, I'm not playing
with Sean anymore.
You should, like, record some of this
stuff. But it's like, since I got the Banana Riders, I can count on everyone to follow me to the next server. it's the perfect scenario.
You should have a roving TeamSpeak audience.
That's the problem.
It is very like, Andy Kaufman-esque performance.
When I'm trying to do a good one, and then someone comes in and they like fuck it all up because they're like, I want to be on in this joke. I want to be on in this, joke.
Right. That's why I was moving the mic away. You can't laugh because then you're,
yeah.
Then the guy realizes he's the punchline.
Yeah.
You want him to actually keep getting mad.
That one, there were two perfect instances that night. The one, the guy was just like immediately irate and he was like yelling that, you know, they need to send you to Iraq. You need to see Iraq and stuff. And I was like, so then I was like, all right, let's run with it. So another thing, they were accusing me of being insanely drunk. So I told him that I participated in the Panamanian invasion, that I was too old.
They also said you had Down syndrome.
To go to Iraq. Yeah. And then I did I told him that I was drinking antifreeze and all this other shit. And they believe in that.
Yeah,
they're going crazy.
Yeah.
And then it's just, you just play it up. And then the perfect combination then is when there's a girl on the server, because you immediately start, because whenever there's a girl in any shooter, she's got like an entourage of white knights,
And as soon as you say something to her, they're all like, yeah, who's this fucking retard? And then I'll just be like, oh, yeah, go ahead and call me that. My own grandma calls me retard. You think it's going to hurt my feelings anymore? I get called that every day, you know, whatever. And so eventually you start building a simultaneously pissing off the guys and building, you know, sympathy with the girl. And so it's perfect. You're creating this, like, awesome divisive wedge. And then they just keep going off. And then suddenly the girl's like, come on, guys, that's just stop. Leave him alone. Just leave him alone. And then you just build in on that, and it just goes from there. Like, her name was Princess Zelda. And, you know, you sound like a real princess to me. And then the guys make fun of that. Shut the fuck up. And then she's like, this is sweet, guys. Shut up. You know, and like, sometimes it just.
That is the most manipulative and awesome thing I've ever heard of.
That's a great tactic.
You know, when Sean first started working at he'd been at EGM for a long time, and then you left, then you were freelance, and then you came back and you worked for us. But early on, when Bully came out, were you already at our magazine, or were you?
Oh yeah, that was recent.
Okay, that was recent. Okay. But I didn't have like total clear insight into your personality until Bully came out. Cuz when Bully came out, or right when it was before or whatever, somebody at 1UP.com sent around an email saying, like, hey, we're looking for a good feature to do online with the Risa Bully. So if you have any good stories about, like, when you were bullied when you were little, or if you were a bully, just send them, and we'll work with that. And so people wrote things. I wrote about, like, getting picked on or whatever. There were, like, a bunch of, like, here's how I was bullied.
I took toilet paper, and I put it all over the tree in front of someone's
house. But Sean writes this, like, 5,000-word manifesto of, like, all the ways he bullied people growing up. And it was fucking harsh shit. I was like, he was a bully. Man, this dude was mean. It was funny.
It went back and forth.
It was funny. But
it's like all tragedies in life. You learn it if someone does it to you, and then you just perpetuate the. Uh-huh. So the kid's two grades older.
It's called the circle of life, right?
Yeah,
I saw that in a Disney movie.
They just teach you.
They punch you. You punch
them. It's like Ryan just learned about Stranglethorn Vale in World of Warcraft. Isn't that right?
I learned about it a while ago.
Quit putting words in Ryan's mouth.
No, but he and I talked about this earlier, the circle of life.
What did he tell you?
I cleared out my Stranglethorn quest. Stranglethorn Vale, for those of you who don't know, is on the World of Warcraft PvP servers, is a very notorious ganking
dude,
spot.
And you told me Weng Weng sounded ridiculous.
This is at least gaming.
That only took me like 5 seconds to
this
explain.
Is on topic.
I still don't know what it's about.
Well, let me talk.
Go ahead.
And so... I finally last night cleared out all the quests I had in that area. Mm-hmm. And I plan on coming back when I'm level 70 to kill some people.
Kill people a lot lower level than you.
Right.
So
right.
Much.
That's
yeah.
The circle of life at Stranglethorn Vale, is you're trying to do your quests there, and guys who are like way higher than you, who have no business being in that zone, will come around to gank you. And you spend your whole time being ganked going, man, when I get fucking high enough, I'm coming back here and I'm going to gank everybody. That's the Stranglethorn Vale circle of life.
Pay it forward.
Wow. Some psychology studies in games. We need them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Little microcosm of behavior.
So what did you learn about...
Games don't cause any bad behavior.
What did you learn about Xbox Live player psychology playing Team Fortress 2?
Uh-oh. Let me just say... But I played the PC version for a couple of weeks, and my PC is kind of ass. And so when the Xbox version came out, I bought it, mm-hmm. and I played it first day, and I was excited to play it with, you know, the nice full graphics, mm-hmm. everything. But the very first game I got into was just a clusterfuck of rednecks. It was insane. No, it sounds so cliche, but there was a guy who was literally was like, I don't understand. I've been playing this game all day. What am I supposed to be doing? And I said, well, you should, because he was playing as a spy. He was playing as a spy, and I was like, well, you should play like a medic or, you know, a soldier or something easy and just get the hang of it. He goes, I don't care who I am, but what am I supposed to be doing? And because we were on like the granary or whatever. I forget what the name of that level is. And he didn't get that you were supposed to be standing on the capture points or defending your own capture points. Mm-hmm. And he said he'd been playing all day. But anyway, I just kept on having these experiences.
Did he not watch the movie when you load the map?
Yeah, it plays you a movie. You gotta watch the movie.
You don't think that he just hit start?
Yeah, wait a minute. What are we
Come
talking about here?
Come on now.
Didn't he read the help notes?
but I mean, I've had better experiences lately. I think people are getting the hang of it, but I've definitely... It's like I've had a few really good games where there are people who are really playing the game, and then a lot of really bad games where the entire team decides to be a spy.
Yeah.
I don't know why the entire team wants to be a spy, but that happens like half the fucking time that I play that game on Xbox. And, yeah.
I've been hearing a lot of reports that like – or at least some guys around here tell me that like, they tried playing on the console over the weekend, and it kept like once you had more than, say, six people playing, it turned into like a frame rate slideshow.
On Xbox?
I've had that happen a couple of times, but not. I've definitely played big games that worked well, but it's definitely not the optimal way to play it. But I wouldn't say that it's not optimal because of the controller. I actually am pretty good with the controller. I'm not. It's
what
not
classes
like,
are you playing?
I actually can play anything on the Xbox version because it's not very hard. Like I can play a spy and get away with it. Whereas in other, like if I play on PC, I get found out as a spy like immediately. Like I just don't pull it off for some reason.
A lot of the
they've been playing for weeks.
Playing,
yeah,
they're used to it. Yeah,
yeah. So I can be sneaky as shit in the Xbox version. But I've been playing Demo Man a lot, and Spy and Soldier.
I would say 0.0001% of the people who played Team Fortress Classic are playing it now on the Xbox too. So.
Right. Yeah, that's
yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't want to be spy though. That's like, you know, that's when all the kids in the playground, they all want you want to play agree to play Super Friends, and then everyone decides they want to be Batman. So then like the
who's stuck with Green Lantern
person's like, "Okay, you're all Batman." And then instead of playing Super Friends, you're playing the fucking Clone Wars or whatever.
I actually think that it's because the character is so cool looking. Like I think that's mm-hmm. most of the reason that people are picking him. Like mm-hmm. when you go to that selection
that
screen
cigarette.
And he does the cigarette thing, yeah. you're like, "Damn, that's one of the coolest characters I've ever seen." Except then people get on there and they're like, "How do I turn into somebody?"
Yeah,
right. And they think it's like Shang Tsung in like Mortal Kombat because they're like, "But I didn't transform." It's like you don't transform into a heavy.
Yeah.
They just think you're one. You're still a dude with a knife and a gun.
Yeah,
like you don't get their power.
So they think you transform.
But I'm not saying that about everyone playing the Xbox version because I've had good games with random people who are really into it and were good at it. And much better than me at it.
I'm sure. Yeah, give it a few weeks, and they'll be all.
I hope that there are plenty of people playing it because it's fun. And a couple of my friends don't play PC games at all, and it's fun to play with them on Xbox.
I wonder about that version. The thing I'm wondering about now is that because Valve's been patching the PC game like on every other day or so, and there's significant like balance patches, you know, buffs and nerfs and stuff like that. So if you haven't been downloading, I mean, you can answer to me, if you haven't been downloading updates for the Xbox One, I wonder what the balance is, you know? I mean, like, because the Pyro technically and the Demo Man are going to be significantly different characters.
Right, but isn't it conceivable the balance issues will also be different on the Xbox as well?
No, like, it's the same. Well, maybe, you know,
because of the controlling and the movement.
Things are easier, but I don't think so, not in this case. I mean, because of the way that... They're constantly trying to find the sweet spot for how much damage, say, that the flamethrower does, at what point a grenade should detonate when it doesn't immediately hit someone square in the face. I mean, those are issues that are going to be the same.
I haven't played enough, I guess, of the game to notice any real difference in that. People seem to play the mm-hmm. same way, like pyros are out of fucking control.
They are.
I think the whole like controller thing is a little bit overblown. I think the problem is you have to crank the sensitivity up all the way mm-hmm. and then get used to playing with really small motions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're a scout then and you're like double jumping around, you can nail like your shotgun to the head.
Yeah, except
every time,
I'm not that great with a scout with a mouse. You know, I'm not like a total like, you know, shooter jock. So I'm not, you know, maybe it's that I'm not really fucking
right. If you're not proficient
with
a mouse, then the controller actually is kind of appealing in some ways because you're like, it's going to do some work for me.
I definitely prefer the mouse, but it works just about the same for me. Except for vertical motion, it's kind of weird. Like, there's something weird about the stress positions you put your thumbs in when you're going at angles and stuff. I don't know, but it's fun. It doesn't kill the game at all. I think it stands zero chance against Halo, looking at my friends list and how few people are actually playing it. Mm-hmm. So, And I wish that it would say when your friends are playing Team Fortress, that just says they're playing Orange Box. So you can't even tell.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, you can't even tell if they're playing Team Fortress.
Now, actually, I think if you like go into like a different a level into it, when you actually like select someone's like ID, it tells you what they're doing in Orange Box specifically.
It does? Okay. Yeah. I needed to check that out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So
that helps.
Yes.
Darren, you want to?
Should I kick off UT3? We got time?
Mm-hmm. We do. It's
all right. Speaking of multiplayer, okay. So, just really quickly, I mean, like, I tried playing the demo this weekend, and this is a case where, you know, how before COD4 would have benefited more from showing off multiplayer. I think that this at UT almost would have benefited more if they showed off the single player version instead, because the netcode was definitely not optimized.
Where'd you hear that?
Me? Yes. Well, no, I'm telling
you. Just this morning.
We were talking about this morning.
You...
But it wasn't just you. I was talking to David Ellis about this, who had the same problem. And I mean, I ended up trying to play most of the time with the bots, because that's how I got it working. So, I mean,
what kind of single player is there in this game? Or is it just like bots on the multiplayer maps?
Well, no, there is actually.
Or is there like a single player? Is there a campaign?
Well, Robert can actually answer that one. He did the cover story on it. But yeah.
Tell us, Robert.
I did the last preview on that too. So
yeah, so I mean, there is a campaign.
Yeah. I mean, when I went there to talk to them, they didn't have much to show for the campaign. They only talked about what they were really planning for it. So I haven't seen how it's turned out necessarily. Mm-hmm.
It's not what's in the demo.
Right. It's just a couple maps.
The campaign, and you can also play it cooperatively with people. It actually sounds cool in that instead of just bot stuff, they will have, like, there's this whole other race of creatures or whatnot. You'll have missions where you're fighting against them. They'll sort of introduce themes. So, for example, the reason you keep respawning is that wars in the future are fought with, like, these spawn chamber technologies or whatever. So you're going to go and try to like eliminate the enemy's spawn chamber so they can't keep coming in. Mm. And then you can fight a war of attrition at that point. Maybe you'll steal one of their vehicles, like a walker or something, and you'll be able to use that like later on in another level. This is, again, from what I've been told. And then that will play some role in a later level where, hey, you guys now have, you know, you reverse engineer these walkers or something like that. So that stuff definitely sounds. I mean, they're putting something there. There's a lot of, you know, customizing your character and all that sort of stuff. But
bless you.
Sorry.
But for the demo, it's just the same exact modes that you would play online, but with.
Well,
bots.
I read mixed reviews on the message boards today. So today it does sound like there's been a lot of problems with people just connecting at all.
It's the weird thing is it's labeled. It's like a new category. It's
beta
labeled
demo.
Beta.
So yeah, what?
It's a beta of the demo.
Or is it a demo?
We're going to demo our beta to you.
The beta, or
it's kind of weird because maybe that's like, I guess that's what the Halo 3, you know, beta demo should have been called instead of beta. So it's frustrating to me though, because, you know, if you're going to use this to convince people in part and use it in part to convince people that they should buy this game, when you get it and there are no dedicated servers, any connection you make is just like horrendous to the point that it's nearly unplayable. Mm-hmm. You're doing your best because you're like, hey, this is a new Unreal game. I want to play it. But it's just the latency is, you know, isn't going to work. And it's especially troublesome for me because the game is so fast-paced and characters move so rapidly. They have, you know, the evasive maneuvers when you double tap the WASD keys. You can double jump. You get jump boots and all these other things. And when you have a game, a Twitch game, you know, to the extent that Unreal series is, and then you like fuck up the latency in your ping, that's like the worst of all worlds. You know, it's like one thing when a heavy weapon guy rubber bands like 2 inches, but when someone's like just, you know, freaking meth jumping all through the map or something, and suddenly it looks like it's teleporting, you know? Mm-hmm. So it really makes it almost impossible for me to evaluate on that sense. But it was difficult because when I did get it to work, when I joined small servers with, you know, maybe 4 people, 6 people, 8 people, and when you get to vehicle CTF, it's definitely not made for that few for so few players.
That map's pretty bad.
It was, to come full circle, here's my point, is that it wasn't really grabbing me. I don't know, I just didn't. It was hard because normally I could tell right away what it is I like or don't like about something, and this time I was playing. And, you know, Rory, who I was playing with once again, was saying, like, you know, let's keep playing. I was like, I don't know what it is yet, but, like, this isn't fun to me.
And it was weird. I'm still trying to figure it out. The performance has a whole lot to do with it.
Yeah,
but again, like I said, I got to play a few where it worked okay because there were a few of us in there.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, did you play against the bots or you're just not into that at all?
I did a few times when I realized after I tried for 3 days to find decent matches.
Ugh.
I think, yeah, bot play in that circumstance is stupid to me. Like, I mean, it's just not fun. Like,
yeah, well, you know what? I got to disagree with you on this one because I mean, not to the whole multiplayer thing with other players, but I enjoy playing some games with bots because sometimes it's just kind of like I just want to like hang out, play a game really quick, and get out. And I don't have a problem playing against bots. I jack up the difficulty and just go on a Twitch fest.
Like, how many hours would you guess that you played against bots with, like, UT, you know, 2004?
To be honest with you, a lot.
Like, how many?
I don't know. I mean, if I would have put a number to it, I don't know, 30, 40, I don't know. I mean, like, I actually don't...
Because
it's kind of like a Zen exercise. I actually kind of, like, don't mind going into those maps or I'll download a mod that takes advantage of it, and then I'll throw in some bots and just kind of goof off.
Okay. Well, I asked the specific hours because it's, like, you know, my classic figure of, like, approaching 600 for Battlefield 2 and games like that is that while I think people might enjoy playing bots, I don't think that anyone that enjoys playing bots enjoys it as much as the rest of us enjoy playing against other people. And that's the disparity between 30 and 600 or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So
that's a fair point. The disparity between spending 30 hours playing a game and spending 600 hours playing a game.
Here we go.
That's OCD.
Is that one thing is perfectly acceptable and the other thing is fucking ridiculous.
That's some good shit.
Well, I mean, it's safe to say, I think with either of these, it we're still at a wait-and-see thing, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like both demos kind of flubbed it.
A few things you could tell, though. Again, you know, like you said, a mixed reaction. Some people love it because it's so much like, hey, this is, you know, UT99 or whatever. Uh-huh. This is an experience very familiar to me. And I have to admit, I'd never been that drawn into a UT game where mm-hmm. I played it to that ridiculous extent, mm-hmm. to the extent that I played a Team Fortress or a Battlefield or something. And there's some stuff that I just don't understand. Like the vehicles, it's always third-person perspective. Some cases, it's great. Like the Manta vehicle.
Oh, I love that thing.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest vehicles in a game of this sort. Just because you have a jump button and you have ability to like pancake it, to bring it down to the ground immediately. And use that combination of abilities to smash people, to catch them as they're jumping away from you, to evade stuff. So much fun to use. However, other vehicles, you know, like... The Scorpion, the Jeep with the blades on the front, Hellbender, and some of these other things. I just can't even – again, hey, it's beta. Hopefully they tweak them. But they control like shit to me. The laser system for all the – again, here's the problem that any game with vehicles at FPS is going to have is how do you balance the vehicles against players that don't have them? How are you going to balance one vehicle to another? And part of it here is that – a rocket will just blow you up. You get the Avril rocket and you just point it at someone. You get an auto lock, you hold the button down and you blow someone up. Their option is to get out of the vehicle. But the lasers, they all shoot these kind of like stupid, you know, the whole old
the shock rifle?
No, I'm talking about vehicle weapons.
Oh, sorry.
So in games like Quake Wars or something, even though they're lasers, a hyper blast or something, they perform very much like, you know, human ballistics do or something. And it's just like immediate. You pull the trigger, boom, you get a result. Here, you shoot this like colored piece of shit and it's like and then someone's running and jumping around. It's like instead it's kind of like, you know, playing a carnival game where they got a swinging, you know, pendulum or something with a bullseye in it and you got to throw it. You got to lead it by, you know, 50 feet and hope for the best that the wind's blowing
it's like the Moonanite's gun.
Yeah.
You will be destroyed by a pixel of death and it's moving so slowly. Yeah.
So, yeah, that kind of stuff, I'm not...
Yeah, there's a lot of balancing you got to do.
Of the vehicles. But again, like I said, others are great. I wish, you know, the hoverboard, and I wish, give me the option to play those in first person perspective at least, because they it gets to feel so toy like, especially the aircraft. You know, it just it has such a different vibe. It's hard to explain, but it's significant difference in experience for me when I'm playing and I'm driving a vehicle from the different perspectives.
The thing that sucks too is just like, you know, you don't want to be releasing a demo at this point that's even mixed when you've got
this
Team Fortress 2
right now.
And enemy territory out there. you can't throw yourself in against those big boys unless you really have something to.
And there's been nothing to address it. They didn't post a patch for it. They didn't post any explanation of what's going on. And it's baffling to me why there are no, why I can't find, you know, I messed with every filter, why I can't find dedicated servers that are, because all the ping information that comes back, most of them are zero. Most of them are like, you know, 2,500 or something ridiculous. Yeah. And then there's a few that are like 16 that you can't join. It's really weird that, the user interface, I mean, that's just nitpicking. That's pretty, you know, god-awful. But, like, yeah, I hope for the best. Oh, something else, though. You know, this is important I want to bring up. Because now we know that all these developers are using Unreal Engine 3. I even curiously, I don't know if it was a joke or not, someone was supposed to be posting comments from a magazine review of Call of Duty 4. And one of the complaints was, like, as good as it looks with this engine, it would have looked, imagine how much better it would have looked with UE3. Which is curious because playing both of these two demos, I was really appreciative of how natural many of, you know, the assets in the environment in Call of Duty 4 look compared to UE3. And maybe it's not so, again, I should say UT3 because it's definitely what part of it's what Epic's doing with their engine. But it's really weird. It looks, everything looks like a Thomas Kinkade painting to me now. Who's like the master of tackiness, you know, the so-called master of light. You know, they got little shops in the mall and everything's just, you know, bloomed out and diffused and fuzzy around the edges. So you've got rock mountains and they're shining. And instead of the old Crisco, it's like, it's very tinfoil. Everything's like super tinfoil. And it's just tawdry to me now. It already is like, you know, this looks pretty cheap already. And that's kind of scary that like so soon into the, I mean, this should still be the engine that's making me like, wow, you know, go into like technology worship. Mm-hmm. And I'm,
gamers are so weird.
A bunch of fickle.
Fetish, yeah. All these like little things. Like, God, you know, this is starting to look a little too shiny.
Do you think really, that, like, really throw bothered. Some mud on that?
I'm really bothered by the Barbara Walters interview lighting in this game.
I wonder if movie fans did that in like the 40s and 50s. Like this Technicolor. You know, it's just really washing everybody out. Hey, I liked it better when it was whatever.
Fuck you. It's not gamers. It's when you make me
it's
go
nerds.
And do a podcast every week and I got to find some new shit to talk about. And I'm only permitted one Wang Wang story, one Meth Lab story, and one Dream story.
You poor guy.
I'm going to talk about the fucking Thomas Kinkade effect going on in the futuristic Bloodsport game. Like, come on, dude. Is it Bloodsport
right.
or is it Thomas Kinkade?
No, you're right. We really have you on the leash on this podcast, Sean.
Wait, is every game we talked about this entire time in first person? Played in first person?
Almost all of them, all. I think.
I feel like lately I only play games
Heroes.
In first
Company
person.
Heroes a little bit.
Okay. It's interesting that games have evolved to the point to where the main action is you're a cameraman. Sometimes you're a cameraman that has a gun in the middle that shoots things.
Yeah.
But basically you're a cameraman.
Well, I did play World in Conflict.
Yeah.
And that was a strategy game. So that was, you know.
Yeah.
That's an RTS. So that wasn't in that perspective.
We need to have a group game of that, and we really need to get people to play Company Heroes 2.
World in Conflict looks so great. I don't know what it is about that engine, but it was really, really looked beautiful just on a totally superficial
level. I'm disturbed by what you're doing with your hands.
I'm doing this gesture with my cell phone. Let me put that down.
You sorry. Looked overly excited about
it. Well, I was
World
talking about World in Conflict. It was making me excited.
Moment.
Well, I should probably actually talk about the game. But do we have to go? I've been podcasting a long time.
Yeah.
We do this every week.
Well, next time we'll talk about One in Conflict.
Good thing we talked about all the stuff we
well,
all
have not played.
About
I have not played about. I have not played multiplayer at all, not even for 1 minute on One in Conflict. I've only played the single-player campaign, which, as everybody knows, is kind of this Red Dawn, Russia attacks the U.S. Storyline, which actually I'm really enjoying quite a bit. I'm a few missions in. I don't know if it gets old. In the early part of the single player campaign, this whole Russia attack Seattle thing, it's been
which the
quite
back
a lot
of the
fun.
Fox claims to be a chillingly plausible story.
We will destroy all your flannel shirts.
Where is this Kurt Cobain?
I spit on your grunge.
Wait, that was 84 so, or 89? Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah. That's definitely how they found that. They've just declassified Soviet plans, and their entire Cold War strategy basically entailed the first strike was You know, see, we originally thought it would be a massive launch of ICBMs and spoof ICBMs. Rather, they're going to land an amphibious force in Puget Sound.
Uh-huh.
And, it's all very chillingly plausible.
Right. And they land in, it's like disguised passenger boats. That's, like, what it was.
Yeah, they're going to an amphibious Trojan horse through.
That's kind of what they did.
Carrying pink plastic lawn flamingos.
It's the Russian army is fueled by fresh seafood. And so they have to have a port to
see. Now you're thinking with Wing Wings.
Okay, you're making fun of this game and the plot, but actually, what I did actually enjoy that it was an RTS that was it was not dissimilar to Company of Heroes and these other war game type things, and it really was at least a different environment. It was not fantasy. It was not sci-fi, and it was not World War II. It's actually a military setting set in, continental United States, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You know, I mean, the maps you're on, like in early on in the game, you're driving your tanks down downtown Seattle.
And it's as kind of plausible as this scenario is, it's like it's so easy for us to imagine it because of, I mean, having lived through that era of, the second Cold War Part II paranoia.
Right. I was also thinking there's something, all the things that they shout to you, all the random sound file blurbs that come at you are also, they're so incredibly jingoistic pro-America because America's being attacked. So, it's like a great excuse for, everything that they're, we'll show these commies what the U.S. is made of. I mean, that's like what every other line is. And it's like, boy, the nostalgia. when it was just the commies and we could hate them. And now we can really hate them because they're attacking our country.
Isn't the game developed in Sweden, too?
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
We hear.
So far, I'm enjoying it a lot. But I guess more on that when we actually have more time. Once again, to talk.
Too many games.
Well, if we're not talking about this week, let me at least say for Company Heroes, whether you have Opposing Fronts or not, I started a sort of meet and greet thread on the 1UP forums. So go there. My name is Obesia. add me. And we've been playing. No, it's all about good 3v3, 4v4 games. And
don't be on Sean's team or he'll grief you.
I'd like to talk about the. It's like for Opposing Fronts. It's like every week. We'll talk about it.
I know.
But it's
RTS week.
I still continue to think it was the game that wrestled me away from TF2, and I've been playing it nonstop now. Have stuff to complain about, just general thoughts that, maybe when you guys play, and again, for me, it's a game about, as much as, at work as they put into the campaign, it's about playing it online, but it's also a very intimidating game, I think, for a lot of people, and I was just, kind of thinking about ways in which you can basically do the Team Fortress approach to that kind of game. Maybe in some ways, that's what World in Conflict is, the TF2 of RTSs, I don't know, but... ways to get people
so
in.
Far in the campaign, at least the campaign is incredibly easy where I'm at so far. I'm not sure if it's just because this is just basically like a tutorial for the multiplayer ultimately, or what.
How do they break down the single player? Do you do like the air units, or are you taking control of the infantry units? Because in the multiplayer, that's how it works.
Well, right now, and I'm only three missions into the campaign. It's been all the ground war stuff. Okay. And it's also very much just like hand-holding you through what's a story, a very linear storyline of what happens to the U.S. here. So they're just, obviously this game appears to me to be all about the multiplayer ultimately is what they're going for here. Mm-hmm. But I've not played it enough to speak about that.
What they need
at all
is some stop letting people make Smurf accounts. Like you make an account and that's your stats, and you have to stick with them. So if you go in and you suck, too bad. You're going to have to fight your way out of a hole. If you kick ass, then people are going to know that you didn't make a new account and join a server called Noobs Only. Please, honest to God, we really suck. And then just go beat the shit out of everyone.
Right.
So finding ways like that because I think that's the impediment. I really like, for Company Heroes, I think it's such a fantastic game. And it's, there's like no one. I'm literally the only person in this entire building, in the entire Ziff Davis game group, who's playing this game or who played... you guys played a little bit the other one. I'm not saying it's good, but I'm like, in my mind, that's a bad situation because I think the game is that fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we should all be playing it and talking about it, but it's like intimidating. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason. I mean, aside from the issues of it being PC and this and that, finding ways to make these games as deep as they are and as complex as they are for people of one tier, but then offering different iterations of it and grouping, sorting players by skill and experience and stuff like that. Because, I mean, I say that as someone who wants to see more people play it. But,
right.
Hey, again, we have people, players of all kind of skill levels joining us. So, you know, go to forums and add and we'll play with you.
Yeah, I was also going to say about World in Conflict, you just reminded me too, that like to me, as I was playing this last night, and because it was so easy and it was so beautiful looking and the storyline is so fun, I thought like this is a game that should have like way more people playing it right now. There's a lot of people at an entry level of strategy games who I think would think that this was actually a lot of fun,
right?
Just based on the whole setting. And I think part of the reason it's not going to is because of the fucking name.
It's
you know, I was
generic.
Thinking about it last. It just sounds like everything else. It took me, and I run this magazine. It took me like 2 months to get into my head between Universe at War and World in Conflict. They sounded like the same fucking game to me.
I just saw a demo for a game called Conflict Denied Ops.
See,
that's
and this is
disaster.
A game about like you could I don't know, Commies Attack, whatever. There's like a million names you could maybe not that one, but you could come up with a game. You know, America Under Attack. Russian Invasion. I don't know, something. World in Conflict.
Russian Invasion. There's whatever.
As far as I can tell, that style of game, like the marketing people, all they ever say is needs more balls. Like that's how they name things. Like they might come up with an interesting title. Needs more balls.
World in conflict. It is marketing people. Like you know, like when Opposing Fronts, when we did that story, they didn't have the name. It wasn't until I had already finished the story that I had to go back in and paste the name in.
Right.
And that was because they had hundreds of options up in front of all the marketing people and stuff. And then they narrow it down to a few. And same thing with Project Origins, another game we've covered recently. Like what the fuck is that?
Right.
Like Origin would have been so much better. Or any another number of things, you know, but like
wait, what's Legendary like, the Box?
That's
my favorite new one.
Yeah.
What do you mean the Legendary Box?
No,
this
legendary.
Is not even grammatically or, correct.
Even I mean, let's be fair. The Orange Box. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah,
that means you got red hair upstairs and downstairs.
Wow.
All right. I don't know why I'm laughing.
On that, note.
That has to have.
Has I know that's like a stupid now, old joke.
Is that a box quote?
Yeah.
I don't know. Robert Astley. Games for Windows.
Yeah.
This game has red hair.
All right.
Don't ruin it.
Okay. Yeah, I ruined it already.
And then the last thing about Opposing Fronts in the speed round is that. Which I should say is a speedrun now because Ryan and Darren have left us.
Right, we've already lost.
Secretly left. Out.
Yes.
They've slipped out. But is that, they patch it so frequently, which is good and is a sign of their, you know, continued support stuff for it. But however, the patch has changed the balance of the game significantly. And unlike, say, okay, well, maybe I can't get away with the same shit playing Pyro as I did last week, it might radically alter your whole game plan for your build order, what I need to focus on. And so when this happens, like even every other week, it's like it takes so long to get comfortable with an army and say, okay, I own this experience. I'm at least in some control. I'm not just going to get entirely rolled over and mocked. And then they just flip it all, you know. They
right, but this is common in strategy games. I mean, StarCraft to this day
just
is
because
still
it's
balancing.
Common doesn't. I'm a relatively new RTS player,
yeah.
And I can say just because something's common doesn't necessarily mean it's good.
Right, of course. But it's the same dynamic as in a shooter. You got people complaining about a certain unit being overbalanced or, you know, or too powerful. Or whatever.
No, but the difference is in the I don't think it changes. Like I said, so say if you make the pyro twice as powerful, mm-hmm. I mean, no one's done that, but say if you did, think of how long it takes you to get that. Whereas what if they change properties for like 17 different units mm-hmm. in your army and the timing on them, the effect that they did, their mm-hmm. weaknesses, their, you know, what they were. Then I mean, that's really going to mess up your game plan. So if you're used to doing a certain thing and you go in and play, and you might not know it all. It's not as like, okay, pyro, burn, hurt, die, don't go near pyro. It's like,
sure.
It takes a while, and then you gradually have to like, okay, well, what are these guys good for now? Well, these guys used to be good for this. Now apparently they suck at it. What do I do?
On the flip side, like, I can't really speak to multiplayer RTSs because I don't play them online very often. But like in an MMO, every time there's a new patch, like in World of Warcraft, my priest is getting totally overhauled again. Mm-hmm. That's almost like a, oh, cool. Like I get to kind of relearn some of these things that I've been using so often. There's kind of that flip side where you're just like, this is slightly refreshing
game.
In some ways.
If mm-hmm. it's too frequent, though, like I said, I think it sucks because I spend so much time like trying to avoid my pratfalls as a new RTS player, and they're so annoying, and that's mm-hmm.
As soon I go in and play a game and someone kicks my ass, I want to start up the next game and be the exact same army that just kicked my ass. So, mm-hmm. like, retarding my learning process for any one. And, like, a weakness for gimmick wins. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can do, like, some kind of all-or-nothing gambit and I win, like, you know, within the first couple minutes, I'll go for that. Even though it's, like, basically also means if they do just this one thing differently, it's going to, like, fuck up my whole plan and then just yeah. leave me open to... like total annihilation on the side. So I'm kind of like weaning myself off of those and like not playing with gimmicks and just like playing by understanding every unit and the enemy's units. And
sort of like most normal people.
Like most normal people.
Right. Yeah.
Gimmick victories are tempting though, man. They are a serious siren song. Because when someone gets you with one, and that's how they kind of like circulate. Someone will do one to you and you save the replay and look.
Sure.
You're like, holy shit, that is effective. Mm-hmm. And then you go
you're not
do
the
it.
The Lord of the Rings.
That's it. What the fuck is that? Leave my dad out of this. All right, dude, that's it. Fuck it. That's your way of telling me it's over. It's over. All it's right. over. It's over. It's over.
Is it over?
It's on, over. Man.
Wait.
We'll see you next week.
Let's all have cake. Monkey night to high. All right, we out.